When I was about 12 or 13 years old, somewhere around that time frame, one summer, my parents packed my sister and I and our two cousins who lived nearby and drove us up to my aunt and uncle's house. They lived in Connecticut, and we spent a week with them and with their son, Jeffrey, who's just a few years older than I am. Their older daughter, Vanessa, was already out of the house. And we spent the next week or so, 10 days or so, with them and with our cousins, and I have some wonderful memories of that time together. At one point, they took us into New York City. I'm pretty sure that was the first time I'd ever been to New York. We went to a Mets game in the old Shea Stadium, and my sister and I annoyed all of the people around us by chanting, "Let's go Bucks," over and over again. The Pirates were not playing in that game. We had a good old time doing that. But one of my fondest memories from that trip was a side trip that we took up to their condo in Okemo, Vermont. Okemo is a resort town, a ski resort town, and this, of course, was in the dead of the summer, so there was no skiing to be had, and the crowds were a little lesser than they would have been in the winter. But it was still a beautiful time to be there in the mountains of Vermont. So they took us up there, and we spent a few days. And I'm pretty sure it was the very first morning we were there. My Uncle Mark took me and a couple of my other cousins in the car and drove us down into the little town of Okemo. It was really almost like a village there. And he took us to the bakery that was in town. And when we were there, he bought, I think it was two or three loaves of fresh French baguette that was still warm to the touch when we got it. And we took it back to the condo, and we put raspberry jam on it, and it is to this day in my top five breakfasts of all time, which is really saying something. You can ask any of the men here who have been at the men's breakfast. They can attest to the fact that I don't normally just eat bread for breakfast. If I'm eating breakfast, there's eggs, there's bacon, there's sausage. The bread is probably French toast. There's other stuff involved. So this was really abnormal for me, but to this day, I remember how delicious that breakfast was, and I think it was totally because it was such fresh bread that we ate that morning. I thought of that as I read through these passages today because those of us in the business call today Bread Sunday, and we call it that because the lectionary pairs up this passage of God providing manna in the wilderness to the Israelites in Exodus with the passage from John where Jesus claims that he is the bread of life. These are fascinating, remarkable stories. I want to turn our attention first and foremost to the story from Exodus. To recap, the Israelites are wandering through the wilderness. They have fled slavery in Egypt. God has delivered them out of the hands of Pharaoh and into the wilderness. They are towards the beginning of their 40 years venture in the wilderness. They don't know it's going to be that long as they embark on this endeavor. They're wandering through territory that they are unfamiliar with and finding that it is difficult to find food to feed themselves and to feed their families. So the Israelites do what the Israelites always did. They became problem solvers. I'm just kidding. They complained. That's what the Israelites did. And they did it well. So they complained to God. They came to Moses and said, "You need to take our complaint to God. We are starving out here." And they also did what the Israelites were famous for doing. They turned it into a melodramatic complaint because they went as far to say as it would have been better for us to have died, for God to have killed us in Egypt, than for God to have led us out into the wilderness and let us starve. You can almost hear the teenage girl voice behind what was going on there, right? Sorry, Kylie. They were complaining to God that they were starving. Now, this happens over and over again as the Israelites are wandering through the wilderness. It continues to happen even once they've entered the promised land and even beyond. The Israelites complain and complain and complain. And over again, God's response often is a response of judgment. But in this story, it's different. God hears their complaint and he responds to their complaint. He hears their cries of hunger and he provides for them. Quail in the evening for meat and for protein, and manna in the morning for bread. We'll set the quail aside for another conversation. It is Bread Sunday, so we're going to talk about the manna. Of course, God doesn't simply give it to them. He gives it to them with instructions and restrictions. Only enough for each person is going to fall in the morning. They are to take but one day's portion every morning. And they have a small window to collect it, because if they wait too long, then this manna that has fallen, that they can turn into all kinds of bread, will either spoil or it will melt in the day's sun. So every day they have to go out and collect their portion of manna for them and for their household. And God, of course, thinks of everything. He tells them that on the sixth day, because they're not allowed to gather on the Sabbath, there will be an extra portion of manna that is given, and they are to take that portion so they can eat the next day. And so this happens day in and day out for 40 years. The Israelites eat manna every day of their lives for 40 years. God provides for them, and at their very worst, they become complainers about having to eat the same thing over and over and over again. And really, who could fault them? Anyone here eat the same thing every day for 40 years? That's a long time to eat the same thing. But at their best, they remembered when they ate that manna, how it first came to be. How they had complained of their hunger, and God had provided for them, given to them what they needed in that moment. And at their best, they did one of the other things that they were very good at. They shared the story of God's provision with one another and with the generations to come. So that every morning when they awoke to find the manna on the ground, and when they went to collect their portion for the day, at their best, they remembered that it was only there because God had provided for them, that God had given them what they needed. So God had given them all kinds of provisions as they had wandered in the wilderness, chief among them this manna. And they called it manna because manna in Hebrew means, what is it? They called this thing that had fallen from the sky and when been there when the dew lifted, what is it? And for 40 years they ate, what is it? Now many have wondered what it was or what it is. But those who live in this region now can tell you what it is. For manna is still there for the people who live. Those who are on the Sinai Peninsula, especially the Bedouins, know what manna is, and they eat it regularly as well. In fact, within the last couple of years, Philip was on a trip to the Holy Land, and he brought me back a piece of manna that I have. Manna, it turns out, is the byproduct of plant lice. The plant lice eat the sap that comes from the tamarack trees, and because that sap is so high in nitrogen, they have to eat so much of it to sustain themselves. And when they do, they pass a product that is high in sugar and carbohydrates, and it becomes a layer on the ground there, so that it can be collected before it rots or before it disintegrates and put into a meal that can be turned into all kinds of bread, fried bread, baked bread. It's sort of like the shrimp from Forrest Gump. We had fried bread, we had baked bread, we had dried bread. So manna is still there today, and because of science, we know what it is, though some reject that that might be what had taken place so many years ago for the Israelites, because it seems like if that is what they ate, then perhaps the miracle has been removed from this story. But I'm not so sure that's true. I'm not so sure just because we know what it is that the miracle isn't still there. Just because the manna didn't come out of nowhere, does it mean that when God provided, there wasn't a miracle? Perhaps the miracle was that God heard the people's complaints and God provided for them. Perhaps the miracle was that it's likely the manna was there before they had known what it was. Under their noses all along, and they didn't know what to do with it. And God had opened their eyes and their hearts to what had already been provided. And in that moment, the miracle that God worked was maybe not in the material itself, it was in the hearts and the minds of the people, which God so often did and so often does. So it makes you wonder, what makes something bread from heaven? Is it the thing itself, or is it the one who sent it? And how you answer that question really tells a lot about how you understand God and God's provision in your life and in this world. Because if for you manna has to come down from heaven as a perfectly baked, nice golden brown loaf of French bread, then you're likely to go hungry. If for you the miracle that you pray for day in and day out has to be exactly as you pray for it, well, then it's possible that you might think that God is ignoring you or punishing you, or perhaps worse, that God isn't there at all. Perhaps if that's your mentality, then you would be tempted to compare your situation to the situation of other people, and you might see it differently. You might think that their prayers are being answered and your prayers aren't, and you might become jealous or hard of heart. And all along, while all of that is happening, perhaps God is constantly providing for you in ways that you are unable, or maybe more importantly, unwilling to see. On the other hand, perhaps you have eyes and a mind and a heart that is able to see the manna all around you. Perhaps in everything that surrounds you. And for you, the manna is endless. So that for you, when you go to bed hungry at night and you wake up in the morning and there's a flaky substance on the ground and you ask too, what is this? And someone says to you, that is the bread that God has provided for you. You are inclined to believe it, to understand it, and to accept it, and to rejoice in it. Because it's not what it is that counts. It's who sends it. God is providing for us and showering us with blessings day in and day out. The manna remains, even if it's not on the ground. It is around us. The question is whether our eyes and our hearts are open to seeing it. Even if it's been there all along and we didn't know what it could be for us, how it could sustain us and nourish us and feed us. Many years later, Jesus was gathered with thousands of people as he was preaching, 5,000 men plus women and children. And the day drew long and it was time to eat. And he told the disciples to get food for the people, and the best they could come up with was 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Certainly not enough to feed 5,000 plus people. But with Jesus it was. And the people that day, at the end of the day, had their fill of the food that God had provided for them. And as the Gospels tell us, baskets full of leftovers were collected. But that wasn't enough for those people. They'd been fed. They wanted to be fed again. And so they continually followed Jesus, maybe even harassed him. And if you read between the lines, you can see he did his best to get away from them. He got on a boat and went to the other side of the sea to try to get away from the crowds that were pressing in on him. But they were persistent. They climbed in boats as well, and they followed him to the other side. And when they found him, they cornered him. They said, "Where did you go? We're hungry. We need to be filled." And Jesus, not one to mince words, said, "The only reason you followed me is because I put bread in your stomachs. You're still missing the point." And so they said, "Well, then show us some further sign," as if feeding 5,000 of us with 5 loaves and 2 fish wasn't enough. "Show us something more. I mean, remember, Moses fed us in the wilderness." And God reminded them, "No, it wasn't Moses who fed you in the wilderness. It was God who fed you in the wilderness." And that feeding has only lasted for so long. And it clearly has not satisfied the deepest of your needs and the deepest of your desires. And so God has sent manna again. Manna that will feed you and nourish you and hold you forever. And so they begged him, "Lord, give us this bread. Give us what will feed us for our entire lives." And that's when he said to them, "I am the bread of life. The once and for all manna that God has sent into this world. The bread that would be broken, but that would be restored again. That would be the bread for the people once and for all, for those who cornered him on the seashore, and for those of us gathered in this cafeteria today." God has continually provided faithfully for God's people, day in and day out from the very beginning, bread upon bread upon bread. It is up to the people that God provides for to open their eyes and their hearts to see that provision, to give thanks, to be filled in the ways that we need to be filled, not simply our stomachs, but our hearts, our souls, and our lives. That bread is offered to us today. It is offered to us in Jesus Christ. It is offered to us every time that we gather at this table, we break this bread and share this cup. It is offered to us every morning when the sun rises and God's mercies are new again. For the bread of life is still with us. We may yearn for hunger. We might yearn for satisfaction, and we might very often find it in the wrong places. But make no mistake, that which will always satisfy is always available, here and now, and in every day that follows. Seek it and eat it and be filled. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen.